Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase. Our show presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, is set to speak here shortly after the 27-24 overtime loss yesterday in New York to now even up their record at 2-up and 2-down. Next up on the docket, be winless Jacksonville. Do they dare go 2 weeks in a row against winless teams and give them their first win of the season? I don't know. Urban Meyer wasn't talking about the Titans today. He was talking about the controversial video over the weekend today at his press conference, which is interesting. If you haven't seen it, I don't know how. I guess you haven't been on social media because it was everywhere over the weekend. And it wasn't his wife that was in the picture or in the video.
Nope.
Old Herb. It happened to a better guy. My guess is he's going to start talking about his heart again.
Oh, medical probably. You know that, you know, something, he's going to have some excuse.
In all seriousness, though, the Jags did look pretty good. I mean, they do seem like they're getting better. I mean, they had every opportunity to beat Cincinnati on that Thursday night game.
With all that's happened, it certainly doesn't look like a gimme coming up on Sunday.
Nope. I think that this is – and look, it's been well documented over the years. You know, they rarely go with sweeps of the Jags. Even in really, really bad Jags years, they have found a way to split the season series with the Titans. We know that. We've talked about it a bunch over the years. So what's the early line? Have we seen?
Three is the last one I saw.
Titans favored by 3?
Yep.
All right. Let's head over to the Titans facility. Let's hear from the head coach, Mike Vrabel.
Quarterback sacks. Well, you know, again, there's three processes, you know, to a pass game. You know, it's about getting open. It's about recognizing man and zone, running the correct route. It's about protection holding up, and it's about the quarterback getting rid of the football and getting it to somebody quickly. And I would say all three of those. You know, when the protection, you know, when the quarterback starts to get hit, well, then he wants to start to get rid of the ball sooner. And then maybe guys aren't open as quickly. And so it's just this process, and we need everybody to come together like we do when we have successful plays. You see that there's protection or there's guys blocking and, you know, we're able to gain yards in a run game, or we're able to get it going on a screen that gets it started, and there's extra effort blocks down the field. So hopefully we can, you know, tie that all into the pass game and not get our quarterback hit and be able to make some plays there.
Especially on the right side, this may go to what you just said, but was it more just kind of losing some battles on that right side in terms of the pass rush, or were they doing a lot of, you know, stunts and games, that kind of stuff?
Well, that's all part of it. I mean, they brought pressure. You know, we got to do a better job picking up pressure when somebody drops out and somebody else comes. Staying inside, you know, things we're always going to teach, and, you know, being firm in the middle of the pocket and trying to get some certain width to it so that the quarterback can operate. You know, and those are all things that we got to improve on. And when they pick, and, you know, we got to come back and make sure we're flattening off the penetrator, you know, those fundamental things that when they run a pick game, that there's no penetration and then you flatten it out. Or, you know, if we're chipping, to be able to use our chip help and not set too deep and all those different things.
You mentioned in the combination of things that led to sacks, getting rid of the football from the quarterback. Do you think there were times where
– There was.
Do you think there were times where the pocket navigation needed to be better? Where you needed to
What's pocket navigation?
Stepping up, moving from side to side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that that's all part of it. And Ryan did do a nice job a couple times, and you worry about the ball when you're doing that. But there were times – to answer your question the first time, there were times where it needs to come out, and then – you know, I think pocket presence is something I've always appreciated with Ryan, his ability to stay in there, to slide and deliver the football. But to do that, you know, it, talk about having some room to do that, to have a firm pocket inside, so that when he does slide away from one guy, he's not sliding into another. And it all goes hand in hand. And everybody, you know, when we don't convert, when we give up a sack on third down, you know, it's about everybody. It's about knowing where the sticks are, running great routes, being open, you know, and having the protection hold up.
60-plus minutes doing everything you can to win. How odd a decision is it to say we're going to send the field goal kicker out here and try and tie this game in the last minute of overtime?
I mean, that's just what the situation was. I mean, I wished we had caught the pass and get down closer to the goal line and been able to win. I don't know. I mean,
an uncomfortable or odd moment to you there then?
It's a new moment. You know, I mean, it's a new moment. I don't think I gave it that much thought. I just think that it was, here's where we are in a situation. You know, I think we were trying to score. I mean, we tried to hit a shot down there and we didn't connect with it with Ferk. You know, would have liked to not have the, you know, operation and have a delay of game, and felt comfortable that Randy was going to kick it. And so, you know, I really hadn't given it that much thought to say, you know, it just was the situation that was presented that we needed to kick a field goal at that point in time.
Consideration of going for two after your touchdown in regulation?
No. I think we're kind of had that last week.
Sorry.
That's okay.
With Ryan, how much can you help him with to get the ball out faster? Three-step drops, shotgun, or things like that to maybe help that side of the mechanics?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do, and there's, you know, we're confident in our passing game, and we can come back. We had some positive passes. We had some conversions on third down, you know, and so there's a lot of things that we can do better. But it's not just about dropping back and throwing it in a second and a half. It doesn't really work like that, you know. You have to be able to have some route distribution. Guys have to be able to get open. There's a timing mechanism to it, and then we have to protect better. So it's not just about catching it and raising up and throwing and thinking that somebody's going to be open for a positive gain.
You've generally been one of the best at red zone offense over your time here. Even yesterday you moved the ball well, but then the red zone part wasn't there. What makes it so much different from, like, I guess, between the 20s to once you get inside the 20, and what specifically has to be better?
There's a lot less space, you know, for them to cover. The ball has to come out quicker when you throw the football. You have to be precise. There has to be distribution. Guys have to get to spots quicker, you know, horizontally, so that you're stretching the defense. You just don't have that much space vertically for them to have to cover. When you run the football, safeties are much tighter, much more involved, you know, so you have to get in there and get those guys and dig them out. You know, just be precise. And, you know, we weren't where we needed to be. And, you know, we're 2-for-2 in the red zone in the second half. And we were, obviously 0-for-3 in the first half.
Jets had a 3rd-and-3 in overtime from the 21. They were spread out. Looked like you guys were running man. A couple of corners were at least 6-8 yards off the ball on 3rd-and-3. Is that something that is a problem?
No, I don't know. I appreciate the question. I saw your Twitter. And I know you're going to take my quote like, yeah, we were wrong. Like, we should have been pressed and haloed. And, you know, I get all that. You know, we've done pretty well on third down. And, you know, you guys talk to me almost every day. You take what I say and you guys can do whatever you want with it. We're going to go in there and coach it at 12:30. You know, Christian Fulton needs to be up and pressed. And, you know, it's 3rd-and-10 and Rabbit needs not be 15 yards off. We're going to tell him that as soon as I meet with him.
Pleased for you to actually get a reversal on a spot yesterday. You know, you never think it's worth challenging those things, and the replay looked at the one spot yesterday and moved it back. You did that surprise you in that moment?
No, you know, called timeout. You know, tried to see if to give him some extra time. I know that we get second guessed and questioned, you know, a lot, but you know, we try to do things that try to help us win, and sometimes it doesn't work out that way. You know, we try to get a short yardage stop, and, you know, they gained an extra half a yard. it's disappointing. We had him in second and 10 and felt like we liked the call, and just they were able to get 9.5 yards. And so we know how hard it is to stop him, you know, with a half a yard. You know, when you get him in second and 10 at that point right there, we got to do better. And we have been better to create third and long, but we gave up too many yards and created a short yardage situation. Sorry, John.
Sorry. The X plays that you mentioned, I know you guys in general have wanted to be more aggressive in terms of coverage this year. I wonder if is that potentially, you know, a downside, you know, in trying
well,
to...
Well, you'd have to tell, you know, I mean, where the penalty on Dane was standing there, he was the post safety, and he's got to play the ball. And the one that Corey caught by Breon was, I don't know, as close as you possibly could be to him, I guess. And then Rabbit looked back and... The guy gained, you know, separation on him. So, you know, missed a tackle on Corey in man coverage. You know, when you play zone, you got to have vision and break and go get the football. When you play man, you got to keep your eyes on your man and you got to tackle. And we've got to continue to change up into calls and mix them and let them complement each other so that when we do play zone, you know, we're disguising and that we can see and vision and, you know, let those things work for us and then playing man and try to affect the quarterback. And when we did, you know, he was running around and, you know, give him credit. They threw the ball and one of our better players who's playing really well, Harold, had a couple shots at him and, you know, give Zach, you know, credit, you know, for getting out of there. You know, and unfortunately we weren't able to get him on the ground.
Back to the conversation about cushion. One of the things that you have said before is that against bunch sets, you can't press all three. You'll get picked. But is there a line where you are too far off and giving it too much space simply because they're in that look?
On the stacked one or the three guys?
Trips.
You know, I don't know which one you're referencing. Usually somebody's up. Well, I mean, somebody usually up, and then two guys are comboing, and you know that would just be comboing at the sticks and, you know, trying to make sure that we're not too loose there, but we're not getting, you know, not picking ourselves either, knowing where your leverage is, knowing where your help is. And if you get beat where your help is, well, then we need better help. And if you get beat across your leverage, then, you know, that's your own fault.
Evaluate how your receivers did yesterday.
Nobody did well enough. Head coach, assistant coaches, quarterback, you know, that's, we've been through this before. You know, when you lose, we all have to do more. We all have to be better. I'm confident that we will. You know, and so we'll see who we have this week. We'll see who's available this week and get them ready to go on the road to play a division team.
You mentioned Harold in the pass rush. He was very active, but you only had one sack. What can you do to affect the quarterback a little bit more than you did yesterday?
There were times where we affected them. You know, I mean, again, there were times where we forced him out, couldn't tackle him. He made some plays down the field, and there were some times where we affected him, and he didn't make plays down the field. You know, threw it short to receivers or overthrew receivers. Third down, we affected him. You know, scrambled. Jayon made a great play, something we tried to coach our guys when the quarterback's out of the pocket. Jayon knocked his guy out of bounds and came and tackled the quarterback short of the first down. Like, to me, that's a great play. It's a play that we've coached for a long time, and it was really cool to see Jayon do it, push his guy out of bounds, come out of coverage because his guy can't catch the ball anymore and tackle the quarterback. Now, there were times where we didn't affect him enough.
What's Elijah got to do to get more in the equation? I know he lost Chris at some point, but I guess he chose to go with Christian.
Yeah, we did. We made a decision there. Just, you know, I think that we'll continue to look at Elijah and see where he fits and, you know, obviously see how he can help us. You know, he's did a nice job in there blitzing, and so we'll have to make decisions, you know, based on game plan, based on, you know, who they have and what their game, you know, what their style of play is and see where we can, you know, he can help us.
Mike, 8 penalties for 98 yards. Some of that from having some new faces in because of injuries, and you know, that's something that you've been traditionally a clean unit on.
Well, Taylor Lewan didn't get set on the first one. We're trying to go fast. He had a hands to the face. Ola's a special teams player. He pushed the punter in his chest. Ola thought he was engaging the punt. He was 10 yards from the returner. Wasn't a blindside block. Didn't hit him with his helmet. Pushed him in his chest with his hands. Dane's pass interference in the middle of the field. Help me out here as we try to go through the penalties. I'm, you know, I can go through them all. I just got to remember which ones they were. Yep. Guy blocked back. I don't know, questionable. Big pile. It must have saw the guy, like, it's whatever they saw. You know, I mean, I don't know. And that's what they saw. Like, do I agree with them? Sometimes yes. Sometimes no. And so I don't think that had much to do with it.
When trying to fix red zone inefficiencies, how much tinkering with play calling is there? How much more? I mean, you guys work on it ad nauseum in practice like you do. What else can you do?
Well, we played a really good red zone team, and we knew they were rated number one. But we can keep working at it, keep understanding it, keep giving ourselves positive plays. I don't think you want second and 10 and – you know, some of those plays that, you know, get you behind the sticks. I think if it can just stay and do what we've been doing when we have successful drives is being efficient. You know, yesterday, as good as, you know, their front was, that was the most efficient that we had run the football. We had our most number of efficient runs at, you know, 4 or more yards than we had all season up to date. So that's something that's positive, and hopefully we can build on that. And when we get down to the red zone, just everybody has to be precise. Understanding if they give us a different look than maybe what we saw, you know, being able to adjust to it. But it's something that, we've been able to score touchdowns here in the red zone. And, we haven't been as good as what we are. We understand every year is, different, and, maybe see how teams are playing us, if they're doing anything different, which, they didn't do anything different coming in. You know, they played cover four, they played, cover three in the red zone, and again, we just weren't able to come out of there with touchdowns.
Worried are you that Ben, Roger, Taylor all are having a hard time playing start to finish in games right now?
Not worried. I mean, I know that they got banged up yesterday, and appreciate their toughness, and the next guy's got to go in, and this would be a big week for us to see, how we can recover, recover physically, recover mentally.
What are you expecting to return from injury this week to practice?
Probably too soon to be able to, know that. Hopefully we were able to get plenty of treatment and get the guys, ready to go. I know we have some guys that could come off of IR designated return, so we'll see. Hopefully that Darrington can practice Wednesday and evaluate him, and Marcus worked last week and Brady worked last week, so hopefully we'll see where that goes during the week.
That's at the AJ and Julio. Any chance on either or both of them practicing, you think?
I think there's always a chance. I don't know. However, whatever percentage you want to put on that or type that in, but always a chance.
That's good. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
There you go, head coach Mike Vrabel talking after the overtime loss. We got a lot to get into on the other side. We'll talk about what he brought up in that presser. In fact, it went a little bit short than what I thought it would be after a loss to the Jets. So we'll come back more on the other side as you listen to the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We need you to go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Current deals include half-price gift cards for Retro Snow, Fat Cat Slim, Central Barbecue, Joyland in East Nashville, and Bad Axe Throwing in Nashville. Get your deals right now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. All right, what stood out to you guys in what we heard from Mike Vrabel? Like I said, I was surprised it didn't go longer, but Mike at times didn't feel like he was in the mood for some questions, but what stood out to you guys?
I think he stood in there pretty well. I think he feels like, he's very aware of the problems you know, none of these things that are getting asked to him are coming as a surprise to him. He's very aware of where they have been deficient and where they're trying to fight and claw and scratch and get through without some really important people. And he's also trying to basically say, you know what, we have to still be able to beat a lower echelon team even with injuries, because injuries are a big part of managing a football season. You're going to have games, especially when they chose to bring on Julio Jones. They brought in a big injury risk based on his age and what had happened the year before. He knew A.J. Brown missed some games last year, and he knew this could happen. So they had to have a plan for being able to win with guys like that. They couldn't quite do it. They were close. And if they just avoid a couple of huge mistakes, you know, it's one thing to have a penalty at the wrong time, but you just go up 17-10 to take control of the game back, and then you've got an offense that's starting to feel a little bit better about themselves, and you give up a 40-yard pass interference on whatever it was on Dane Cruikshank, where he's there. It's not like he's beat and he's trying to recover desperately and he's got to pull the guy down. He's back there. He's back there in the right spot, and he fouls the guy. It's a free 40 yards. That just breathes life into a team that hasn't won much. It's given them a little more confidence. It's given them a little more belief that they can win. It gets the crowd back into the game. The crowd's hungry for a win. The Jets fans, you got to give them credit. Like I heard, the tickets weren't going for very much. It was easy to get to the game. But that team hadn't won jack in a while. And they had a group there that was trying to urge them on to win. And when you make huge mistakes like that and they give up 50 yards, that's a killer. That's a killer. They just did things to give a team that doesn't have a lot of belief, doesn't really know how to win, it gave them a chance to win, and it burned them.
I think the thing that stood out to me there is, I know he, you know, we've always brought up coach better, play better, and he started to go down that road, but I felt that he gave it a little more substance, because everything that we have been saying to, you know, today, I think we have blamed just about everybody. Like, it's not just one person. We've put the blame on the head coach, the coordinators, the quarterback, everybody but Derrick Henry, and I'd put McNichols in there. I think Landry had another nice game. I mean, there are certainly others.
Landry is having a good year.
Yeah, Landry's having a good year. So there are certainly ones that deserve some praise. But overall, the team just did not play a good game. And so I think if anyone, you know, doesn't see that, coaching, et cetera, and Vrabel acknowledged it. Vrabel said, we didn't coach. It's on the coaches. It's on the quarterback. It's on the offensive line. And you can take that most of the time, like if he says coach better, play better, it's coach speak. But I actually believe that, and I think he believes that. And that's just the truth. That's what it was. It was on everybody yesterday.
And the Jets, to their credit, played better than they've played. They're playing at home. And they didn't give the game to the Titans. They didn't just say, you know what, here you go, three or four turnovers. We're not capable of winning a game. They put together their best effort. And the Titans did not. And the Titans are playing without A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Bud Dupree. Those are three huge dollar guys. Well, not dollars for A.J. Brown yet, but three extremely important guys that go a long way.
And the Jets were missing important guys, too.
They were.
Yep.
They were. And that's why you didn't hear.
Guy in the secondary is pretty good.
Yeah.
Best guy.
That's why you didn't hear Mike Vrabel say, well, we're playing without these guys.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing that is really hurting them. And they make up for it with the Cameron Batsons, the Breon Borders, the guys that we've been talking about who fill, free guys that they find in space that are on the street that they bring in and play roles. But we looked at the last two drafts. The influx of new talent that has to replenish your roster. Christian Fulton is the only guy from the last 2 years that is making any real impact.
Yep.
That's, we're talking about a total of a dozen players, right?
It's a huge problem.
Like, they're getting I mean,
zero production.
Basically zero.
Draft capital, high draft picks, and guys they've spent a lot of money on.
So it just it catches up to you. You can't be perfect.
So,
but here's the problem, Willie. We're in week four. Well, now going into week five. There's a long ways to go.
So let me ask you guys.
So how does it get fixed?
Right. How does it get fixed?
They have to develop.
What's changed? Because we did in
the
summer.
Do they have time to wait?
No.
How long is that going to take?
But
and I'll give you another thing that hurt them yesterday that once again reared its ugly head, and that was the special teams. It better special teams might have been enough to win the game yesterday, or at least tie it.
Yeah.
Right, if they make the 49-yarder, that's on the kicker. He had a chance to make one, and he didn't make it. The punter was terrible. He had a horrible kick.
Honk if we've ever seen that when Brett Kearns out of the lineup.
That was a big fear coming into the game, and it
12-yarder.
Well, and they overcame that, but what they didn't overcome was the line drive. And I heard Mike Keith on the broadcast yesterday. He goes, the reputation that he had was too many kicks that were returnable. And sure enough, he kicks a line drive to Berrios, who returns it big. They come right back and hit the bomb for the touchdown to Corey Davis. Big, big momentum changer right there. And the special teams, they had penalties in there. Special teams, this is where your margin for error gets thinner and thinner and thinner with all of these factors. So when you ask, how do you lose to the Jets? Key guys out, draft picks not giving you anything, special teams screw-ups, and then all of a sudden the gap between you and the Jets isn't that big, especially when the Jets put together a decent game.
Well,
for
the gap shouldn't be big against the Jets, ever. Ever.
But they're only a six-point favorite. So that's, again,
they're
in the NFL.
A six-point favorite on the road? What are you talking about?
But
that's huge.
But again, perspective. We talked about it. In this league, the gap between the best and the worst isn't as big as it appears.
You know who's six-point favorites on the road in this league? The teams that everybody's identified as the upper echelon, the top-layer teams.
Well,
like Kansas City goes on the road, and they're favored by 6 or 7 points.
One score. It's a one-score
thing.
What
was the line? The Bills were favored at like 14.5 against Houston yesterday.
No, they were favored by 17.
17.5. Okay,
so Houston is another level of low. That's what I'm pointing out. The Jets are bad, but they're not as bad as the Bills. I mean, as the Texans.
I think they're close,
though. No, they're not.
All right, so I'll turn it around. Then the Titans aren't as good as the Bills. If the Titans were one of these
better
teams.
I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I mean,
The Titans are not a juggernaut. They've won a lot of close games. They had won 6 straight overtime games. I think it was a lot of the analytics people, when they pick against the Titans as a contender, they're pointing out that their record in close games is precarious. They've won a lot of them, which is to their credit. But it just shows that they're not overwhelming the opposition in talent. And that it's a razor's edge league. There's so many things that can go wrong if you do things to slip up like they did yesterday.
So I want to.
Well, we had a caller, and this is what I know, bring up. They play down to their level of competition. I don't know if that's true
or not. I don't
know
if that's true.
But it feels that way. So why does it feel? I mean, it does. It feels that way. They play up or they play down according to their competition. That's what a caller said to end the second hour. I don't know if it's true, but it certainly does feel that way.
Okay, other than Derrick Henry.
If that wasn't the case, why would we have been saying everything that we did last week
game? Let me ask you, Derrick Henry, once again, it shows you the value of him, how much he elevates everybody else on the team. But especially when you take away A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Bud Dupree, is this a dominant roster? Do they have dominant players? Who are the dominant players on this roster besides Derrick Henry? You take those other guys away? I don't know.
Well, they're paying Bud Dupree to be dominant.
Right. He wasn't there. He didn't play yesterday.
I understand.
Is that a dominant team that they put out on the field?
No, but see, this is...
Derrick Henry helps a lot.
I know, but I'm just not going to give... Teams, I've said this how many times, all you have to do is just watch the red zone or just... Go look at the rosters. Go look at all the inactives. Sunday morning at 10:30, an hour and a half before kickoff. Teams are missing key players all over the league. The league is littered. Like, what do you think?
Bingo.
Christian McCaffrey is Derrick Henry. He's the equivalent of Derrick Henry to Carolina. Right? That is their Derrick Henry. They went to Dallas, and they were undefeated, and they didn't have their Derrick Henry. And you know what? They got down big, and they fought – all the way to the end. And they lost. They did. But they didn't go in there and just get mopped and say, well, we don't have our best player. He is their best player, and it's not even close. And they went in there and they fought Dallas, who right now Dallas looks to be a lot better than all of us thought. And they put up 28 points, and it wasn't good enough. And their defense has been really good, but that just tells you how good Dallas's offense has been because Dallas was in the 30s. But they didn't have the league players drop left and right. It happens all the time, every single week. And I'm just telling you, the Jets had key players. They don't have good players either. And they were missing some of their key players. So what does that tell you? They're not littered with great players. Tell me they're great players. Some of them looked great yesterday. But, I mean, tell me up and down their lineup of the great players that they have. Look at the receivers that were catching balls. Are those great receivers? Keelan Cole, what did he have, 56-yard reception? Is he great?
No.
How many people have Keelan Cole on their fantasy team? He had a 54-yard reception yesterday, burned them bad.
And he also had the one of the biggest catches of the game in overtime where they were just talking about it. And Mike Vrabel got defensive, but he realized how big of a play that was. He talked about they weren't lined up correctly. Adam Archuleta in the booth said it right away. That crossing route was a beautiful throw by Zach Wilson, but it's also the Titans weren't in the right spot. They weren't set. They weren't ready to cover that. And so Keelan Cole hurts them. He's a free agent pickup for the Jets.
But
so
he's not a great player. He's a fine player. He's an okay receiver.
Yeah.
He's not bad. But he burned them bad. Like, I mean, the Jets, look at the up and down their line. Corey Davis is their number one receiver. I mean, it's not like it's the who's who. He did, but it's not like it's the who's who. It's not DeAndre. By the way, AJ
goes
Green
back to you,
keeps catching touchdowns for right. Arizona. Has anybody seen that?
So this this is an art in this league is finding ways to
win
fill
when you don't have
your best
players.
Guys.
Yes.
And so that was an example. They did some good things. But
so
why
can't the Titans do that?
They have done it. They've won most of these games. They'd won six straight in overtime. There were a lot of games last year. The COVID game against the Bills.
They did it last year.
They absolutely did it last year, and they did it this year in Seattle.
What was different about last year?
What was different about last year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was. I mean, we know the difference of last year. It was a lot of the same principles.
Because you had a lot of the same people.
A lot of injuries last year.
Yeah, but you had a lot of the same people. But what was the big difference? Arthur Smith.
Well, offense and defense go together. I'm just pointing out that you can't.
And the defense sucked last year, and the offense was so good.
So
that
it's all Arthur Smith? That's not a good enough excuse. A guy gets
a
job
to
be a head coach. You got to be able to move in and do the right thing.
Here's the thing. You brought up the draft picks over the last 2 years, and you were 100% right. But what has changed? Especially, let's just take it side by side. Look at defense. What has changed?
A lot has changed in the defense. They brought in about half the guys are different.
Right,
on
but
defense.
But also the draft picks from before 2 years ago, they've regressed too. Jeffrey Simmons hasn't been very good. Kevin Byard hasn't been very good. I mean, there are others that have regressed.
But the defense overall has been better than it was last year.
It's okay, better. Sure, better. But
yeah. I mean, you can't panic because they're 2-2.
And I'm not panicking.
They've made some strides on defense. It was disappointing yesterday that they could not disrupt the Jets more and create more mistakes. They especially because they took away the Jets' running game. So you got a rookie quarterback who has no running game, and they allowed him to make enough big plays to win the game.
Was it just the Jets, though? Have they disrupted any offense to this point?
I think their pass rush has been better than it was last year, but it shows you how bad it was last year.
How many sacks do they have this year?
Well, they're on pace for a heck of a lot more than they got last year.
Good Lord, is that your gauge? Last year's sack total?
And Bud Dupree hasn't played the last two games.
I mean, they had 15 sacks on the season going into the final game of the regular season. Is that really your gauge? Hey, let's be better than last year? Well, I would hope so.
There's nowhere to go but up.
Here's what I'm getting.
It's been better. I'm trying to be realistic on what to expect from the defense. And
they're not creating turnovers.
I was hoping they'd
they're
be
not.
Not at all. And that was disappointing about yesterday.
Isn't that a huge problem? They're not creating turnovers.
It's a huge problem. Yes.
They have 8 sacks on the year.
All right.
They have.
So they're on pace for
the opposition has 17.
To be better than last year. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, way better. They're on pace for eight times four. That's 32 plus. Yeah. So that would be a lot better than last year.
Here,
still no great shakes, but a lot better than
last year. Well, remember the
year
before,
and
they had 45.
That's with
Dupree,
zero.
Why can't they get to the quarterback?
And they have had zero from Dupree, who's missed the last two games coming off a knee injury. We asked the question all through training camp, is there maybe a little too much expectation on this guy based on the situation? And it's turned out to be absolutely.
Here is my point. And John Robinson and his staff don't get a pass for this either, so I'm not giving him a pass. But when I look at all of these guys we're talking about, the entire roster, whether guys are hurt or not, and yes, that is going to hurt a team, but as Darren has pointed out multiple times, every freaking team in the NFL deals with that. It just you have to know that it's going to happen, and that's why you have 53, or really on game day 55, on a roster. And you have to have everybody that is on that roster play to the point of, hey, they're good enough to be on an NFL roster, and when you call their number, they're going to do something. The point is, 2 years ago, you had Arthur Smith and you had Dean Pease. And from a defensive standpoint, I think Dean Pease would look at Mike Vrabel, as close as they were and as his head coach, and say, hey, Mike, I got it. Get out of my way. You don't have that now. Now it's Shane Bowen, who's his buddy. It's Todd Downing, who has been on the staff and I guess is one of the guys that he's loyal to. I don't think he has anybody that's telling him, hey, you hired me to do a job, let me do my job. I still think there's hovering going on, and it's showing. These players aren't being developed like they need to be developed. And you're having guys that were good that are regressing. So explain that. To me, that's coaching.
I don't know how much you can say the defense is regressing, because we're talking about
Jeffrey Simmons
last...
hasn't looked good.
No.
He's been non-existent.
Nope.
And the pass rush didn't get better. What's changed? So why is he regressing?
It's a good question, but regressing, this hasn't been a good defense really for several years. I mean, it's been a long time since you can say they've had a good defense. The offense has carried them for a good while now.
Outside
True,
of Harold Landry yesterday,
say,
who had a really good game?
Nobody.
Harold Landry was awesome. Who else had a good game?
That's it.
I thought Autry looked a little bit better.
Autry had some key plays, yeah. I'll give you that.
Once again, I come back to your expectation level. They've taken some steps forward. They've got to try to keep that mentality, and they've got to hope that Dupree comes back. They were not only missing Dupree, but they were missing Roberson. They were also missing Weaver, who's out for the season. They were having to use Autry on sort of a defensive end. They were doing like a hybrid thing. Adini, who had a really nice game for him the week before, went completely missing. I didn't see him at all yesterday on defense. But again, he's a special teams guy. He's not really a guy. So they were.
But he had
down.
A really good season to that point, to that game.
It's just hard when you were so bad last year and you're trying to fix everything, including the pass rush. Landry has been a savior. Thank goodness he's doing what he's doing. And, you know, I think Long has been okay. They're better than they were last year. The offense has taken a little bit of a step back because the red zone is not as money. They've had it. The offensive line is a mess. And the two ace wide receivers have given them very little to this point, collectively, based on expectations.
But Julio Jones has given them a game.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, he's had a few moments.
Well, game
he's had
a game and a half.
A game and a half.
Game and a half.
A game and a half of how you hope it would look.
Yep.
A.J. Brown, not even that. Not even close.
A.J. Brown's been a ghost.
But you got a long way to go.
And even when he was
go.
In there, he's dropping passes.
You have a long way to go. I don't think A.J. Brown's coming back this week based on what they said today. Who knows about Julio Jones? So they might be right back in this boat again on Sunday against a winless team with all kinds of issues that they have to overcome. So it shows you their margin for error is small. So the mistakes, like the delay of game in overtime, the third and one snap loss of 17, they're not good enough to overcome those even against bad teams with the limitations that they have.
Let's go to Chris on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up?
Hey, guys, what's up?
How you doing?
Yeah, you guys bring up a lot of good points. I mean, the defensive has improved just a little bit. Harold Landry's the only one that's really playing well. Christian Fulton was playing good up until yesterday. But, Willie, you brought up a good point several minutes ago that, and I love J-Rob, but the last 2 years, they have struck out with their free agent acquisitions. It's still got a long way to go. We'll see what Julio does. And their draft picks, and it's really starting to show, especially on the right side of the line. They basically have blown two picks on the right tackle. And I'm sorry, I love Quisenberry and his story, but he is a backup. He is not a starting tackle. And if Ryan Tannehill keeps getting killed back there, he's not going to make it through the season. Now, they're 2-2. It's got a long way to go. They still lead the division, but, you know, we just cannot feel good about what we're seeing out there on the field.
All right, we'll discuss that on the other side as we close out hour number three. We'll do that next. Thanks for the phone call. You're listening to Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final preseason game for the Preds will be this Saturday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena. Let me take it on the Hurricanes. 3 o'clock, a little matinee hockey this Saturday. If you would like to win a pair of tickets, be lucky caller 5 to Max Hers. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Be lucky caller 5, and you'll win a pair of tickets to be in the building with us Saturday afternoon against the Hurricanes. All right, let's go off what the caller said. They just brought up some points that really we've been putting out there for almost 3 hours on the show. It is a concern. It is a huge concern, these draft picks. And somebody right now, it's still early. It's just 4 games. There's 13 more to go. But if you're going to discuss it and you're going to assess blame, someone has to take the blame, shoulder the blame for now. Doesn't mean it can't change. But for now, it's either got to be the wrong picks are being made, and that goes in the general manager's lap, or these players aren't getting developed properly, which would go into the coach's lap. Mm-hmm. If you had to answer that today, like I said, it can change. But if you had to pick one side of who's to blame right now on why they're virtually getting no production from their draft capital the last 2 years, whose lap does it fall into?
It's honestly the hardest question to answer because, and I'm not answering it this way, I'm saying, but you can make a case for both. You can totally make a case for both sides. But my thing is, why has, you know, up until last year's draft, up until the 2020 draft, I think we sat here and we said, you know what? John Robinson in his tenure, he's done a pretty good job of drafting. That he's been better at drafting than he has free agent signings. True? We've said that up until last year.
The 2019 draft was a really good draft,
but even his first draft. I mean, yeah. Conklin
I think
Henry.
The trade of the first pick, which was really the first big move he made, got him Derrick Henry. It got him Conklin. I mean, there's some good things there.
Yeah. So
Corey Davis was not a bust. I mean, unfortunately he's not with them anymore.
Wasn't the fifth overall, but I mean
but he's a good player.
Sure.
So there were some decent marks. But he's gone from that where you're like, okay.
Right.
And then the last two have just been completely mystifying.
So what has changed? That's my
nothing.
Something has because they're missing. Like they're
missing. I don't know.
Is it scouting? Is it evaluation? Or as Darren brought up, is it coaching? Again, I can make an argument for both sides, but the biggest thing for me, especially on defense. And Darren, you have pointed this out before. You have said this several times with Dean Pease, and that Dean Pease could get Kamale Correa, could get the most out of Kamale Correa, guys like that. Why is that not happening now?
I'm just saying if we can have the discussion about Adeniyi and NWI, who Willie loves, and these guys who come out of nowhere, and they give them real production, guys that they've had to throw in on the offensive line to fill gaps, which is going to happen through the course of the season. If we can praise them for that, And, you know, and by the way, the Cam Batsons, the Khalif Raymonds, the Nick Williams for a short window, just these guys that have Chester Rogers now, and these guys they've been able to throw in there that nobody was talking about and get production out of. Why aren't they being able to do that with the draft picks? That's where I'm confused. Like, why do they, if we're going to praise them for the bottom tier of the roster and getting production out of guys nobody's talking about, and at times you don't even know who they are. There's, I mean, we've seen games, especially last year, it's like, who the hell's that guy? Where did he come from? Who's the guy with the hair? And he gives them production for a game or maybe two or whatever. So if they're able to do that, why are we sitting here talking about Caleb Farley, Elijah Molden? Isaiah Wilson's probably a different case study, but Dylan Raidens. I mean, they drafted Dylan Raidens second round. And this guy, with the offensive line woes that we've talked about through four games, I mean, two games are just Fs, right? If we're teachers and we're great, please tell me, Willie, you would not give anything but an F for yesterday or the Arizona game.
For pass blocking.
The offensive line.
For pass
blocking, it's an F. That this guy can't even see the field whenever guys are getting blown up left and right on the offensive line, and this guy isn't good enough to be on the field? Like, that is a concern.
You know,
why haven't they been able to turn?
There's one thing,
we praised Elijah Molden. We praised that pick. We're like,
well,
hey,
and he's been benched.
That's a good one.
He's been benched.
Right. So why haven't they been able to with these no-names come out of, you know, they come out of nowhere, and these no-names get out there, and they give them production, but why can't the draft picks do that the last 2 years?
Maybe there's a little too much. If I had to look at one thing that I'm trying to put my finger on, we've talked about it with Farley and Raidens. They did not play last year. So yeah, to think that they were going to come up and just jump right into the NFL after not having played at all in the game of football last year. Plus, on top of that, Farley had, you know, some health issues that he was working through. That's a little too much of a leap of faith,
well,
I think.
That was the first and second round picks.
I know. So that's the net result. Now, maybe those guys in time will turn out to be good players. And if they do, they'll be vindicated. But to think that they would be helping him in the first 4 weeks of their rookie year was probably unrealistic expectations. Now, if they just make a field goal yesterday, they're 2-1-1 and still have a pretty decent handle on a division. So now you're 2-2. You're still not in panic mode at all, but it's just difficult to see down the road where Farley gets back in. He's got another injury on top of this now. He's not getting a lot of reps. So where's he going to be in week 10, week 11? That's what you were hoping for when you drafted these guys, is by the end of the year, they get in. That was one of my questions before the season, my proposition questions. Who's more likely to be in a starting spot by the end of the season when the games are really big, Farley or Raidens? Right now, it's a toss-up. I have no idea how Raidens is developing behind the scenes. But, man, remember we kept asking this about Wilson. Golly, wouldn't it be nice if they could get Wilson in there sometime? And, of course, it crashed and burned. We know what happened there. But is Raidens developing behind the scenes? Nate Davis did take about a half a season before he got in there and became a reliable offensive guard.
But I mean, they weren't playing him, so yeah.
Right, but you also have a fourth-round pick that's on the practice squad. Like, he didn't even make the team.
Yeah. Well, they cut
him. Oh, yeah.
At a position, right. This is what, yeah, he didn't make the team because at a position of need. So
you guys are answering general manager's lap?
If you're making,
what it sounds like,
who else can it be? It's a buck stop there.
I mean, it starts there, but
well,
it
could be the coaches. Well, they're not being developed properly.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying. I mean, I know you're trying to make me pick a side here, but I do think both sides share the blame. But the biggest part of the blame, I'm going to go on the general manager, because he's the one that ultimately makes the decision to select the players. But I don't think they're being properly developed either.
Well, what year is this for Mike Vrabel?
This is year 4.
Okay. So far, the examples we've used have been on whose watch?
Mike Vrabel.
Yeah.
But can you say that's
the answer. I'm just saying a lot of these examples that we use are on his watch. A lot of the praising you did at the beginning of this conversation was on somebody else's watch. True?
Well, not entirely. I mean, Byard and even Jeffrey Simmons at the beginning, that was Dean Pease. So that was still Vrabel's watch, but that was under Dean Pease.
Yeah, but you, Conklin and Corey Davis.
Fair,
and
fair.
All these guys you were listing, those were on somebody else's watch, were they not?
No. Nope.
But Corey Davis looked good under Arthur Smith.
Byard was on somebody else's watch?
But, he was drafted, yeah. But, I mean, a majority of his career where he got his contract, that's been under Vrabel. And Dean Pease.
Is it safe to say that Byard seems like he's been going the wrong direction the last couple of years?
Yes.
Or is
Since
it unfair
Dean
that
Pease
he
left.
Just burst out? He was so good early on that maybe it wasn't a fair gauge. Because it just feels like he's been going the wrong direction the last couple of years.
He
or
has.
Was his standard just too high?
I mean, I think Dean Pease was good at using guys and using them to their strength. Like Willie pointed out earlier, the defense wasn't great, wasn't the best defense in the league, but he took guys that he could see their strengths and he played to their strengths and was very good at doing that. And, you know, he used Logan Ryan, for instance, and knew how to use Logan Ryan in a blitz scheme, and that opened up more lanes for others like Kevin Byard in the secondary of rushing the blitz with Logan Ryan. He knew how to use players to the best of their ability, and I just don't think that that's happening right now.
By the way, do you know how many touchdowns the Lions scored yesterday?
I don't.
Two. Do you know who had them? Kalief Raymond.
Mm.
Yep, he had two touchdowns yesterday for the Lions. Congratulations to Dakota and Dixon. Dakota was lucky caller 5. Dakota, thanks for listening. We'll see you Saturday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena. Predators hosting the Hurricanes' final tune-up before the regular season. We'll come back with the final hour. We'll start off with little NFL zingers to get things going. That's next here on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.